Previously on the Ron Van Dam Show.
Should we go out to eat? I'm thinking about hair extensions. Ooh, that makes no sense.
Stop playing with me.
All right, here we go.
And now, today's episode.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. I can't believe you're here. Good to be with you. I've always wondered about the term virtual reality. Why do we even need that? If reality was that good, like this is a perfect reality, we wouldn't need a virtual version. Virtual reality was created because this reality sucks. And of course, I'm being a little extreme, but I'm not. If life was so wonderful, why would we set up a virtual situation where life was even better than we could possibly imagine or even have? And that's virtual reality. And how do you get virtual reality? You put goggles on. That's it. You put a goggle on your head. Life is not good enough for me. I'm going to put goggles on my head. Well, there you go. I tried that thing. It was a fad for a while. You put these goggles on your head, and there's these little tiny screens in your eyes there, in your eyelids, whatever. And you're put into a different situation. I guess they use it a lot for gaming purposes. You know, like if you want to be plopped into a world of people shooting each other and blood splattering and trying to get into the castle and shooting down all the bad people, that's virtual reality. That's not a reality I really want to be in. It might be exciting, but it's stupid exciting. My virtual reality would be putting on goggles and this tremendous person of the opposite sex, or the same, depending on your outlook on things, you would have virtual sex. That's what we need, virtual sex. It's not sex. It's virtual sex, because the sex you're having is not good enough. Oh, it comes far from the realm of good. We have to have it virtual. Everything's virtual. Do you know we have to go to Disney World to make believe that life is so wonderful and enjoyable? Because it's not. So what do? We get away. People tell us, oh, you got to get away. I got to go on vacation to get away from it all. What are you running from? You're running from life itself. So we come up with these virtual realities like Disney World or Disneyland or SeaWorld. That's for people that like fish. we go to these places where a fictional situation is created. Still have to spend money. And all the reality is just gone. Now you're in the Magic Kingdom with Mickey Mouse running around and Donald Duck running around with no pants on. That's virtual reality. There's a princess in the castle and she's beautiful and I don't get it. That's where we run to. We run to these fictional things that don't exist. Wouldn't it be wonderful if someday you could say, I love this reality. I don't want to leave it for a moment. But it's not the way we're set up. We're set up differently. That's how we do it. Well, welcome to the program. My guest, I have an extended interview on today's program. My guest is a wonderful lady who wrote a book about jetliner cabins. And you're probably saying, Ron, what? What are you talking about? Well, most people do fly. not in the sense of flapping their arms and moving off the ground, but they get into airlines, they get into jetliners, and they sit back, and they're, again, supposed to have this incredibly wonderful experience as you get transported from one place on the planet to another place on the planet. It's very utilitarian, but at the same time, are you a first-class person, a business-class person, where, you know, the flight attendants say, oh, would you like some more champagne? Would you like to put your feet out the window? Can I pamper you? Can one of our airline assistants actually get on their knees and satisfy you sexually? Is there some way that we can make you feel even better than you feel now? Or the economy coach class, where sit down, shut up, strap yourself in, and just be quiet and stop talking to me. You want a pillow? Get it yourself. It's just such a big difference. In coach, it's crying babies, screaming people, people that stink, people that haven't showered in 5 weeks, people that don't know how to shut up with verbal diarrhea. They're cramped. The person in front of you is... There's no leg room. You can't, your knees are up in your chin. It's just a horrible. You can't wait. This is awful. Cramped. You're sitting in a toothpaste tube. Business first class. There's lovely music playing in the background. Enya's doing a personal performance in your lap. The food is just flowing. Your personal chef comes by and creates a dish right in front of your face. And you can put your feet out. Whatever you want to do, would you like a freshly baked cookie that just came out of our oven? It's such a big deal. Would you like the terry cloth robe as it shimmers across your lovely breasts? It's just a whole different experience. Now, I don't fly that much or at all because I think it's actual torture. I don't have enough money to fly from one state to the state next to it and spend $10,000 doing it. I think it's a waste of money. It's ridiculous. So I tend just not to do it at all. I've never been thrilled by looking out the window and seeing the ground 6,000 feet below me. That is not a thrill for me. It's a time for panic. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, when the public flies, they should be issued parachutes. I mean, not that that's really going to help, but at least you got an option. And I'm not talking because there's something wrong with the plane. I'm talking about because I'm seated next to a baby. That's when you use the parachute. I'm not putting up with this crap. I will risk my life to get rid of this crying baby sitting next to me. Or this guy that's, oh my God, he hasn't brushed his teeth in like 23 years and the odor is just horrible, and there's no place for the odor to go. Oh, my God. Anyway, she is here today to talk about jetliner cabins. The comfort of flying. Can you be comfortable in flying? How has that developed over the years and the decades, the comfort of flying? That's one thing. The other thing about flying that I just can't get into is being herded like cattle. Of course, it's very important now that we go through the TSA lines, or I call it the lines of disgruntled people who aren't getting paid who still have to protect your safety. That makes me a little bit nervous.
Here on the Ron Van Dam Show, our policy is anything goes.
Do not twist my nipples.
Okay, almost anything goes. You're listening to the Ron Van Dam Podcast.
There was a time where you would pull into a gas station and a guy or a girl, usually a guy, would be wearing a uniform, a gas station uniform. What is a gas station uniform? Millennials have no idea. There was actually a uniform that gas station attendants actually wore, so you could distinguish them from regular people. But when you saw a gas station attendant, you kind of thought, oh, here's an expert, here's a mechanic, here's somebody who knows how to put gas in my car. But that's not all they did. They would walk up to your door, you'd roll your window down, and they would say, regular, unleaded, premium, chocolate, vanilla, and you would tell them what kind of gas you wanted put in your car. And they would take the hose from the gas tank, insert it in your car for you. You didn't have to get out of the car at all. What, are you kidding me? Yes, they did it for free for you. You did not have to get out of the car at all. Well, that sounds wonderful. Why don't they do that anymore? I'll tell you why. It's the salad bar thing. It's the salad bar thing. You want gas in your car? Get out of your car and do it yourself. I'm not doing that for you. You want gas? Go do it yourself. What the hell do you need me for? And that was the end of the gas station attendant time. But that's not all they did. They would say, would you like me to check your oil? As you sat in your car. And you would say, yeah. This is before cars told you that the oil was getting low. We didn't have those indications on the dashboard back then, before they invented the wheel, practically. Which means there was no car, so that makes no sense. But they would say, do you want me to check the oil? And you would say, yeah, for free? You can date my sister for free. I mean, or whatever. Sure. You want to iron my pants for free? Yeah, go iron my pants. Here's my pants. So you'd say, yeah, you can check my oil. And they would say, would you mind popping the hood? Popping the hood. It sounds wrong. It just sounds wrong. Hey, Ron, what'd you do last night? Went out to dinner, had a few drinks, and I was popping the hood. You know what I'm saying? So they would look at your engine, and then they would pull out your dipstick, another phrase that people shouldn't have used. And with a handy little rag, they would check to see, they would clean off the dipstick, dip it into the oil part of the engine, and then check to see if you were low or not. And if you were, they would put oil in your car. Oil at that part, it was like 25 cents, and it wasn't a big deal. It was oil. This is oil. I mean, we're not talking about liquid gold. We're talking about oil. And they would pour it in there for you. And then they close the hood. And then they'd say, can I clean your windshield? Yeah. Are you kidding me? Why are you even asking? Sure, clean my windshield. Wow. They did this for free, ladies and gentlemen, so that you would go back to that service station every time you needed gas, because they had service with a smile. When do you get anything with a smile anymore? You don't. It doesn't exist. Nothing with a smile. Nothing. They did all that stuff for free, ladies and gentlemen. And gas prices were low on top of it for the most part. Now, do it yourself. Just shut up, turn the car off, and do it yourself. We don't have time to hire people for this. You do it. You want to clean your windshield? There's a little thing hanging next to the gas tank, the gas pump there, and it's a dispenser. We give you a little brush. Do it your freaking self, will you? Get off my butt. Pump your own gas. Clean your own windshield. Give me a break. They used to also offer to check my tire pressure. How much is that going to? It's free. There was also a time when air was free. You didn't have to pay for air. Do you know why? Because it's all over the place anyway. You didn't have to pay for air. You didn't have to pay for water. That stuff was plentiful. Nobody even conceived of charging somebody for air. Come, are you kidding me? It's all over. You can't not have it. Unless you're strangling yourself, air's everywhere. Water? Yeah, most of the planet is water. Give me a break. Now, We pay for water, and we pay dearly. Air? Well, it's still free to breathe, for now. But if you want to fill your tires with it, that's going to cost you. Probably a dollar, or 4 quarters, more accurately. You insert them in an air machine, and then you can fill your car up with the air. Are we paying for the air or the contraption that puts the air in our tire? It doesn't matter, because we didn't have to used to pay for that. We're being swindled every day of our lives. And that's why we need virtual reality in Disney World. It's a pitiful situation. That's the way things used to be. And we think things are so much better now. No, things used to be pretty damn good. Next time it's snowing outside or raining, think about just sitting in your car while these people run around your car making it look wonderful for free. Well, Ron, you know, there are like roofs over the gas tanks where you can get out of your car and you won't get wet. Oh, shut up. Just shut up. That's so stupid. That is so stupid. Stop being stupid. Our guest joins us now. She is an expert in the field of airline comfort, especially the cabins in which we fly in our jetliners. She's a historian and also quite knowledgeable as to what's in the future for airline travel as far as comfort is concerned. Seems like those two words are opposite. Airline travel and comfort don't ever seem to jive together for me. Let's speak to our guest. Jennifer Coutts Clay joins us. She's has over 40 years of experience in the marketing and operational management of airlines with some of the biggest airline companies that you know. And she joins us now. We're talking about Jetliner Cabins. There's a new ebook app that provides pretty much the most comprehensive look at the flying experience. It's kind of the first one of its kind. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. Very great to be here.
Last time we talked, I was fascinated about the history of the jetliner cabins, more or less how we are treated and what our atmosphere and environments are like while we are flying in these luxurious cabins. Sometimes luxurious, sometimes not. What is different about this time around? What are the advances that we're finding?
Well, we do see that fares have come down. Mm-hmm. For example, since 1980, according to Airlines for America, Mr. Calio, the president, he made a presentation very recently saying the average round-trip airfare, USA, adjusted for inflation and including ancillary fees, is now 40% cheaper than it was in 1980. Wow. And you can't actually say that sort of thing about many products. So airfares are more attractive than ever before. And in 2017, on the world's scheduled airlines, according to IATA, the International Air Transport Association, there were 4.1 billion passengers flying during 2017. Wow. So that's the big news. A lot of aircraft seats up there in the air, and a lot of passengers, and very attractive fares.
Yes. Gas prices right now, as we speak, are almost historically low. I mean, not historically forever, but, you know, in comparison to the prior 10 years. Do prices on airlines go down as they spend less for fuel, or does that really not matter?
That's a very interesting question. And what we see and what we have seen over the years, when fuel prices go up and going back, you know, to, oh gosh, sort of 8 years ago fuel prices were very high. Remember, they were shooting towards 150.
Correct.
Yes, you do hear about airlines imposing surcharges and increasing fares and adding special, they call them fuel taxes, fuel tax.
Okay.
Now, when the price of oil goes down, we don't hear about airfares becoming lower. Mm-hmm. What happens is that airlines do organize their fuel purchases way in advance. So, mostly. So they can't switch back, but when they see the price of oil rising, they are able to take action so that they are able to recover some of that revenue that they need. So, yes, that's the way it works.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like every other phase of business where, if it becomes a little heavy, charge your customers. If it becomes lighter, don't say anything. Okay.
Well, there's the other side, however, mm-hmm. when airlines are doing well, and for example, look at the last 2-3 years
yes.
here in the United States,
yes.
The amazing figures of the major U.S. airlines,
mm-hmm.
What happens, they do plow their revenues into cabin upgrades,
okay.
Purchase of new aircraft,
all right.
and we've seen that. If you look at first class and business class on the major carriers, Polaris on United, Delta One on Delta, you can see wonderful upgrades in business class.
Yeah. Maybe you know about this. The biggest complaint I get from anybody that flies, including myself, is the seats going back to the point where the person seated behind you is now crunched into a fetal position and can't move. It's the most annoying thing I find, because it shows me the person sitting in front of me has no regard for what's going on behind them. Do airlines, do they care about that kind of stuff?
They ought to, and it's terrible to hear about people being cramped and squashed
yes,
in the sardine row in that way. And the reason is real estate, every square
sure.
inch, you know, they're trying to get the best use of the real estate accommodation availability
but I wonder,
inside the cabin.
But I wonder why it's so mandatory that somebody in a seat needs to be practically in a lying position. I don't know how that started. I guess you should be able to get some sleep, but maybe recline just like 10 or 20 degrees, not like in a prone position. It's just, I don't understand mm-hmm. the reason for that.
And are you talking about economy class?
Yes.
Yes. Well, what's happening with the new seats, the very new seats,
mm-hmm.
they have a hard shell at the back. So
when
the passenger reclines, in fact, the front of the seat rolls forward and the feet go in underneath the cushion of the row in front of you, but that you can't recline backwards and hit the person in the row behind you on the knees.
I like that.
So that's the very new style of economy class.
Yeah.
It's only just being implemented, but definitely that's the shape of the economy class product in the longer term future.
Yeah.
Now, there's one other thing that's happening. Airlines are restricting the amount of recline to maybe 2 or 3 inches,
Perfect.
Not 6 or 7 inches.
That's what I'm talking about.
Now, that is mechanical, and that is doable. And if I'm on an airline where the person in front of me is really making my life a complete misery, it's possible to ask, could you please make the seat back a little bit more upright, or even to ask the flight attendant. But airlines are able mechanically to restrict the recline mechanism so that the passengers can only recline 2 or 3 inches.
Yeah. Well, asking is fine, but it doesn't usually work that way. I mean,
if enough, customers are king and queen. If
That's
enough
right.
customers
That's right.
make a fuss and send in their messages, look, half the passengers are working on their screens and devices at least half the time during their flights in general. It's possible to send messages. And if enough people raise this issue, airlines want to look after their customers, and this is a way that they can help.
Yeah. Well, it's part of the flying experience. I mean, I always say that if you want to learn about how disrespectful people can be, just fly an economy. But that's just me, I guess. Anyway.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that some of your flights will be happier. They should be happier.
Hope so. Let's talk about technology, because that has almost taken the place of comfort, in my estimation. The upgrades on technology are incredible, yet the mechanical not so much. Tell me about, obviously the experience changes almost every time you're in an aircraft. There's a little bit more technology thrown in there.
Yes, we now see Wi-Fi enablement inside the aircraft, mm-hmm. and this has made a huge difference. I've noticed people do sit far more quietly,
yes.
same at the dentist, yes. same when you visit the doctor. people are looking at their screens and they feel comforted because they're in touch with their best friends,
yes.
with family members. They are able to carry on their connectivity even though they're 35,000 feet above,
yes.
you know, the landmass. And this wasn't possible a few years ago.
No.
So the Wi-Fi enablement has been wonderful for passengers. And then we also see LED lighting.
Uh-huh.
And the major airlines have installed lighting programs
right.
to help to provide a relaxing atmosphere yeah. in all the cabins. It used to be only yeah. first class or business.
Correct.
But now it's nose to tail inside the aircraft, all cabins. So, for example, they'll have nice sparkly, yellowy daylight, sunshiny
uh-huh.
lighting for boarding and disembarking.
Uh-huh.
And then for the duration of the flight, they usually tone down a bit and you get a sort of bluey colored glow or
yeah.
a pinky glow to be more relaxing. And I think yeah. this has made a big difference inside the cabin.
Yeah. Let's talk about food for a second, because mm-hmm. that's also part of the equation. As you probably know, continental United States flights, not a lot of food going on. Yet if you fly a carrier that is out of Europe or actually any other place in the United States, you're going to get some nice food. I guess that's a decision that the United States made in their airliner handling?
Well, in my chapter on, it's called Dining a la Jet Set
mm-hmm.
in my book, right at the beginning of that chapter, I did mention that after 9/11, it was a terrible time
right.
after the terrorist attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, passenger numbers were low,
sure.
people were worried about
sure.
flying, and the airlines had to make payroll
mm-hmm.
and had to keep going. There was no question,
right.
U.S. airlines, as with U.S. public,
mm-hmm.
had to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And all the major U.S. airlines, with the exception of Continental Airlines, stopped serving food on board.
Right.
Now, at that time, again, as I've mentioned in that chapter, the average economy class meal, and we're talking 2001, 2002,
mm-hmm.
cost $4 per person
mm-hmm.
in those days.
Mm-hmm.
So they were suddenly able, at that time, you know, we were looking at worldwide, there were about just over a billion passengers
mm-hmm.
worldwide on the scheduled airlines. So here in U.S., we're looking at probably half a billion,
mm-hmm.
something like that. They were able to make great cost savings very rapidly.
Right.
What happened then, people started to bring their own sandwiches on board, bring their own favorite chips and nuts and crisps
mm-hmm.
and toffee apples. I've seen people with toffee apples inside the aircraft. And so other systems evolved, including buy on board.
Uh-huh.
So the airports jumped into action, offering packaged meals and mm-hmm. snacks inside handy little boxes.
Yes.
It was a great selling opportunity at the major airports.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the situation is very different. And the airlines here in U.S. do offer food in first in business that's comparable to food anywhere else in the world. But you're quite right. In Europe and Asia, in economy class, they come along and give you a nice snack when it's tea time, a sort of larger snack with a hot sandwich when it's dinner time or lunchtime. And yes, the airlines make those decisions themselves, and those costs are reflected in the fare prices.
Yeah. I think it's the old story, once you let the toothpaste out of the tube, you can't get it back in.
How do you put it? That's a very interesting analogy. Yes, well, and certainly for economy class, I think there's a big question mark, what to do about economy class.
Yes. I would assume that the numbers percentage-wise, economy to first class and business, I assume first class and business would be, I'm going to take a guess. I'm going to guess 8%.
That's a difficult one because it depends on the route, the day of the week, the aircraft type, and those details. But you're quite right. The numbers are much, much smaller. In very general terms, in the aviation training courses, they say to you, oh, it's sort of, again, depending on the route, depending on the day of the week and the season, it could be 80-20, that, 80% of the passengers are in economy class and 20% are in the premium cabins. And then, of course, on revenue side, you might get two-thirds of your total revenue from the premium passengers and only a third from the economy class passengers. These figures vary around the world. But the interesting thing is, if JetBlue, now talking about flying to Hawaii, for instance, that's a long-haul flight. We're talking well over 2,000 miles for that flight. What's going to happen exactly on food when the low-cost carriers start to operate on the longer-haul routes? You see, when the flight is only an hour or 2 hours, look, we go to the cinema, we go to a sports event, and we don't have to have a cooked lunch in front of us on a tray. It's really after 2.5 or 3 hours that the question has to be faced. So that's the interesting aspect now for the next year or so. I think the airlines have got a big question mark now to deal with.
I don't know. All I remember is when I was younger, going to London and back to New York plenty of times, thanks to Freddie Laker. That's all I remember.
Oh, yes. Turn up and take off the MD-10. Now, he really was the progenitor of low-cost, long-haul travel.
Yeah.
And people still talk about Freddie the legend.
Sure. Yeah, it was quite something, which I guess one can't do anymore, but we all go back to the better times sometimes. The book is full of interesting things about comfort flying and cabin conditions and all that kind of thing, and what the future holds. Also, the airline companies are already have planned that, and what's to come is in the book itself. It's an e-book. Now, tell me how it's called Jetliner Cabins, Evolution and Innovation. It is available through your software, and where do you go for that?
Right. Go to Jetliner Cabins website, so that's jetlinercabins, all one word, .com, and the book then can be obtained through Apple, Amazon, and Google, depending on whether you use iPad or Kindle or Droid devices. And so it is available for the different devices. And I hope that you and your readers will enjoy going through Jetliner Cabins.
It's fascinating. It's something that almost everybody does, and everybody in their mind has got a little wish list, and you'll find a lot of the answers and discussions right here. It's Jetliner, all one word, cabins.com. Thank you so much for conversation today.
Well, great to speak with you, Ron, and thank you so much for your interest, and I hope that your next journey by air will be a very bon voyage, a lovely
Excellent.
Journey by air.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, there you go. And there you have it. I hope you've learned something that you didn't know before. Not that that's the purpose of this show. It just would be nice if that were the case. Well, it's time to send you back to your reality, because this one's been virtual. Join me again tomorrow, and we'll have different people and talk about different things, and maybe we'll go dancing. Of course, I have to lead because I have control issues. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace. Not that I have control issues so much as that I'm told that I do.